I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. It's a great pleasure to welcome my colleague of many years, Terry Anderson, of the Hoover Institution. But now this is the author, Terry Anderson, and the editor, Terry Anderson. The new book is Adapt and Be Adept. This is a story of market responses to climate change all around us. The chapters here go in many different directions about politics, about economics, about the physics of energy, and also one lovely chapter about an Alaska Native villages, one in particular on the Koyukuk River, which is a tributary of the Yukon River, where adaption is automatic, and yet people must have control, authority. They must have input for their adaption. It can't be imposed from outside. Terry, a very good evening to you, and it's a pleasure to speak about a subject that's all around us. You have a witticism in here that I'm going to call up right now about climate change. It's Pascal's wager. Pascal's wager had to do with, in the original, with suppose there's a God, suppose there's not a God. What are your choices? And as I recall, the way the wager goes, I'm going to believe in God because if I do, there'll be heaven and eternity. If I don't, I'll give up some candy and I'll not be a rascal on good days. But that's not losing a whole lot given what I'll gain if there is a God. Now, if I apply that to climate change, suppose there's climate change and suppose there's not. Why not proceed as if there is? Because then, of course, I will be prepared for the changes that are coming. Have I stated Pascal's wager correctly in the analogy? Good evening to you, Terry.
And good evening to you, John. I think you've stated it very well. And in fact, just what you said, if climate change is real, we can tilt at windmills, no pun intended. Well, maybe it was a pun intended. Or we can be prepared in other ways, as the people, the Alaska Natives on the river you mentioned, are prepared if they have the ability to adapt, the wherewithal to adapt, and the information at hand to encourage them to adapt. And those people who live in Alaska on that river have the reality of the day, and it is what encourages them to adapt. And if climate change affects their lives, they will know it, and they will adapt because they want to survive.
You have different chapters by economists and all very well constructed, and they go in different directions. I want to seize upon the chapter by Mark Mills, Hydrocarbons Are Here to Stay. There are some statistics, but I want to look at a chart that you provide for us. Acquiring fuel and food as a share of GDP. It begins in the beginning of the 14th century, 1300, and extends to 2000. We're well into the 21st century. And my goodness, Terry, we were dominated by wood and the search for food for 900 of those years. It's only recently that it's been possible to generate electricity thanks to fossil fuels so that we could specialize and prosper. Terry, when you look at this chart, you think to yourself, no way we're going back. No way. We're going to have to figure out how to maintain our electric load, our specialty, and at the same time deal with climate change. Is that a general opinion, or is there still a debate out there, Terry, whether we're going to go backwards or not?
Oh, I think there's still debate, and there are many people who would like to see us, I don't know whether they would call us going backward, but would like to see us move away from those fossil fuels, not towards wood, of course, but towards alternative energy in the form of solar and wind. And I think that's a going backwards of sort. I think they see it as the move forward, the people who support that change.
Now, Mark Mills has some statistics here that are hard to overcome. One is that the electric generation from renewables on planet Earth right now is 2%. In the U.S. is 3%. We do a little better than planet Earth. However, there are physical limits to what we understand renewables can do. I'm chiefly speaking of solar and wind, but I'll bring in hydroelectric, and I'll bring in nuclear as well as a broad definition of renewables. At the same time, the cost of generating the electricity we need, the cost of generating the energy we need, is daunting. I mean, I don't think we have enough money to match what fossil fuels can do for us. Is that a accepted generality? We can't afford to be renewable yet.
Well, you use the term, do we have enough money? And therein is the solution as seen by Washington bureaucrats and politicians for how we can afford it. We will simply print and dump money into the proposals that are moving forward in Washington towards these renewables that are far more costly than the market can bear. And so, you know, we will use government debt. We will use inflationary tactics to pay for this. But if you say, can we afford it in any kind of meaningful economic calculus, the answer is emphatically no. And I think another point to emphasize out of Mark Mill's chapter, is that we have had huge efficiency gains in these renewables, especially wind and solar. But like any productive capacity, these efficiency gains come early on because anybody can figure out how to put a new bearing into this windmill or make that solar panel just a little bit more productive. But once you've exhausted those early gains, the percentage increases are very minimal. And the result then is we can't come close to matching the energy demands that we have that are now met by fossil fuels.
Costs. I'm writing down some numbers here that were awfully persuasive. $1 million worth of shale gas, that is the natural gas, produces 300 million kilowatts of power. $1 million worth of renewables produces 50 kilowatt hours of power. Terry, game over.
Exactly. The orders of magnitude there are just startling. And when you look at the zeros in those two numbers you just wrote on your paper, you just say, how can we possibly imagine that renewables are going to displace gas from shale? And then to emphasize the importance of the cleanliness of gas and really the cleanliness of all fossil fuels compared to the past and in the case of natural gas, just pure and simple, it is a clean source of energy, though it's fossil fuel based.
The other part about renewables is that the wind doesn't always blow and the sun doesn't always shine, so you need storage. And that means batteries. Now, quite distinct here, I write down again, $1 stores a barrel of oil or an equivalent amount of natural gas, $1. To store the same amount of energy for a battery, it costs you $200. So now, Terry, it is possible that people want to overpay that much because they're virtuous. It is possible. But this seems fantastic at this point. Is there reason to believe that $200 for the battery can improve? Or are we topped out with battery storage?
Well, again, back to the efficiency point, I don't think we're topped out, but to improve it to the point of getting it from 200 to 1, we are not going to have that happen. And then there's another constraint, and that is the availability of lithium. Of course, lithium requires, heaven forbid, mining. And mining is another no-no for the environmental community that is afraid of global warming. Now, if you stop mining for lithium, then you don't have the lithium for batteries. And without lithium, that storage that now costs 200 won't be 200 anymore. It'll be 400.
I'm speaking with Terry Anderson of the Hoover Institution, but he is also the editor of a new book, Adapt and Be Adept, Market Responses to Climate Change. We're going to speak of the recommendations and the suggestions of adaptation, but first we're going to go to Alaska, to the Alaska Native villages in the United States of America, and lessons learned from managing or not being permitted to manage your adaptation to climate change. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network.